listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests provide advice, resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show that has a career that you are interested. So you have to tune in every week. Now, if you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website, latalkradio.com, and click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. You scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and you click on the link. And this will take you directly to our archive page where you can view a list of all of our past guests. And just to let you know, our shows are also available for download on iTunes, and we're under the podcast section. So you just click on podcast section on iTunes and type in Question Reality Radio in the search box, and that'll bring up all of the shows we've been on since 2008. So there's lots of variety, tons of shows. We've got award winners from every different category. So very, 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 very interesting show. So you want to check it out. If you want to find out about our future guests, visit the official Question Reality website. And that has all of the guests from our shows all the way till the end of the year. And just to let you guys know, we are currently booking for the 2012 season. We have probably just January. I don't like to go too far, but our shows are usually booked 6 months to a year in advance. But right now, I just want to focus on January. So if you know someone in the entertainment industry, a professional that would love to come on the show and that could provide our audience with career advice, that would be fantastic. Please refer them. You don't have to be in California. We can do the shows remotely. So just email, send your press kit, call, whatever's best, and we would love to hear from you. So that website, the official Question Reality website, is questionrealityshow.com. questionrealityshow.com. Now, we have an incredible guest for you today. We got a lot of responses via email when we sent out our mass email to say Dennis Shields was going to be on the show. And we put a little blurb in there about his latest book. He is an author, and he is we're going to talk to him about if he has any other books, but right now we're going to be talking today specifically about his latest book, and it's entitled God Went Fishing. God Went Fishing. Isn't that an absolutely wonderful title? And I am going to tell you a little bit about it in just moments, but let's get to the portion of our show that all of my little actors and people out there who are looking for some classes want to hear about. We have a wonderful class coming up at Actors Creative Workshop. They're registering right now. It is called The 6 Triplets and 8 Devices of Comedy, and it has it's with casting director Nick Anderson. Now, this has come back by popular demand. It was an extreme success, and people were booking things right and left. So he has come back. He has been out of town casting a film, but he's back, and he is better than ever before. And it is time to get you funny. Even if you aren't funny or don't think you're funny, this class can help you get funny. So did you know, I just wanted to let you guys know that sitcoms are like where it's at. Do you know that according to Entertainment Weekly, the cast of The Big Bang Theory, one of my favorite shows, the cast members are making a reported $200,000 per episode. $200,000 per episode. And this is only season four. So I know personally, I'm like, sign me up. And I know you want to get in this class if you really want to get those comedy chops. Again, it's a comedy intensive for Sunday starting at 1 p.m. The first class is on June 26th. It skips 7-3 and it goes to July 10th, July 17th, July 24th. And it's only $225. He does have an advanced scene study class, but you have to email him for approval on this class, and that would require an audition, et cetera, et cetera. And for Sunday, starting at 4 p.m., and that starts June 26th, July 10th, July 17th, July 24th, again, $225. You can email for payment instructions. I think they do PayPal, but you can email them at info@actorscreativeworkshop.com, actorscreativeworkshop.com. You can also go to the website. Now, just a little bit about the class. In this class, Nick will teach you why comedy comes in threes. That's all you need to know. Comedy comes in threes. Everybody knows it, but you know, have you ever stopped to wonder why it comes in threes? And knowing why is what allows the actor to make intelligent comedic choices. So you have to learn how to do those six triplets. That is very, very necessary in order to analyze the script. And there are eight comedic devices that can be applied to a joke to bring the funny home. So Nick is going to teach you how to do that. You know, people have always suspected that there was a formula to comedy. Well, yes, there is. And Nick Anderson can teach you that formula, and he does it step by step so that you can make sure that you get, you make the right comedic choices to book the job. You have to book the job. Now, this guy, Nick, I think I have told you about him before, but just to refresh your memory, before opening his own office, he worked with the top casting houses, including a huge one, Junie Lowry Johnson. And she booked True Blood, and that office won the 2008 Emmy for Outstanding Casting for a Drama Series. And then their office did Ugly Betty, and you know that won the 2007 Emmy for Outstanding Casting, et cetera, just on and on. He was with Dava Waite Casting for My Name is Earl, and you know that won the 2006 Emmy in 2007 Arduous as a comedy series. Yes, Dear, Hot Properties. He casted for Will and Grace, 40-Year-Old Virgin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he's been on his own, and he's been hard at casting, and he's got a full slate of projects from Empires of the Deep, which is a $100 million film shot in Beijing, and it has Olga Karolinko from Quantum of Solace. Some people remember that. And he's doing Savage County, and that's a series for MTV. Archetype, which is a film starring David Anders from Heroes and Vampire Diaries. And then he's doing CSI New York. So blah, blah, just on and on and on and on. So you want to get in this cast class, and he's casting her films, TV series, commercials, right and left. So again, these classes are not classes where you go in. When you go there, basically, they're going to say, this class is not a class where you come and you get up here and audition and we're going to cast you. They don't guarantee you any job. But everybody knows, it's like a thing that everybody knows, if you go in there and you are a really good actor, this is a guy, he's a casting director. And if you're good, you're going to get called in that office for something sooner or later. So that is like the unknown but known secret. I would highly recommend registering for that class. Now we are back to our guest today. Let me just tell you a little bit about Dennis Shields. He has had phenomenal success in the world. I'm going to say in the world. He's enjoyed a career in business and finance. He founded a bank, he created an industry, represented his country in sport, and he, from what I understand, I'm not sure about this, if this was something he that was just thrown in the bio, but I believe he had a go at acting in a major motion picture directed by an Academy Award-winning director, but then it said that he's really good at exaggerating, so I'm going to have to see if that's true. That's exciting, so we'll have to find out the scoop on that tidbit if that's true. And his latest book is entitled God Went Fishing. Very cool title. I'd read it just for the title. But it's a commentary on the vices of 21st century society. And many times the grim aspects of society need to be portrayed in ways that are at once palatable for the reader and aesthetically appealing. So the author of this book, Dennis Shields, he entertains and he exposes one societal ill after another. And from what I understand, his aim is to bring about self-examination and a desire to improve life in our imperfect world. So I believe that God Went Fishing has elements that can really spark controversy and debate. But the purpose of the book is to ignite thought and dialogue among 21st century readers. So while there's an ever-present battle between good and evil, it's at the forefront of the book. The author, Mr. Dennis Shields, he purposely concludes that the notion of that redemption is possible. So I think that it's a definite read for anyone who loves an intriguing tale and challenges on many levels. And I did get an email from a lovely lady who wants to know about that further, and we're going to get to her question a little later. But first, we're going to welcome him. Welcome to the show, Mr. Dennis Shields. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, my God. Well, I was just so thrilled when I got the email from Lena Williams, and she said, oh, we have this guy, and he wrote this book. And when I saw a blurb about the book, I just found it it was titillating to me. So, you know, I start every question off, every guest gets the same question. What did you, Dennis Shields, what did you want to do as a profession when you grew up? What did you want to be? Everybody wants to be something when they're a child?
I wanted to go into finance.
Finance? As a child, you were thinking about that. Wow.
Yeah.
You didn't want to be a fireman, a police officer, a doctor, a lawyer. You wanted to go into finance.
Yeah, it seemed like a good idea when I was a kid.
Really? What would you be thinking about that would say that you wanted to go into finance? What was going through your mind? Were you counting your pennies, selling things and thinking, oh, you know, I want more money? What was going through your mind?
My father is a physician. My mother's an attorney. And I was 9 or 10 years old, and I guess it was sort of superficial. I was at a restaurant one day, and some guy drove up in a Rolls Royce, and my father knew him, and I said, we got into discussion, and he said he's the president of a bank. Actually, it was an old bank called Manufacturers Hanover, and because he had a nice car, that was what I always thought I wanted to be, was the president of a bank.
Well, that's normal for a little boy. He sees a car, it's nice and pretty, so he wants it because you associated it with the being a president of the bank. So we know from your bio that you founded a bank, so you did go on to do that. So let me ask, why and how does one decide to take on that task? Was it really from when you saw that car and your dad told you that that guy owned a bank that you really carry that in your claw into your adult life and that's what you had to be? Or how did that happen?
No, it was that was sort of a fleeting thing. And then years later, I had a couple of finance companies, and we had a concept to provide banking service to the legal community. So I formed a bank called Esquire Bank, and it's a nationally chartered OTS, Office of Thrift Supervision, bank, which caters to the trial bar.
Wow. Okay, so you went on to, obviously, you are an attorney.
No.
No. How did you... You created a bank called Esquire Bank, but you're not an attorney.
We had another specialty finance, or a few specialty finance companies, which did a lot of different businesses with law firms. And we realized, well, we thought they were underserved, and people didn't understand their banking needs. So we formed Esquire Bank, and it's been a pretty good success story.
So you still have your bank?
Yeah, I'm the chairman of the board, and
and you don't even sing as well as Frank Sinatra. You are the real chairman of the board, right?
Right. I can't sing. I can't sing at all.
Well, I'm sure you try. So in your bio, it also says that you represented your country in sport. Tell us about that. What sport was it? And give us some juicy details.
I played on the over 35 national team in the Pan American Maccabi Games, and we lost every game except for the one that I didn't play. I got thrown out of the third game, and that was the only game they won. But I'll tell you about my acting career, which was short lived. My closest friend is a screenwriter and director who wrote the movie Rounders. He wrote Ocean's 13. He wrote Runaway Jury, and for years he's used my name as in his movies. And when he was working on Ocean's 13, the director of that was Steven Soderbergh, and they had an idea for a movie which he wrote called The Girlfriend Experience. And he asked if I wanted to be in it, and I ended up being in the movie The Girlfriend Experience.
You
it was
did.
A very, very good movie.
And how did you like be exploring your little acting chops? How did you feel about that?
Well, it made me realize it gave me a new appreciation for how hard it is to be an actor. And it's amazing how effortless the good actors are, because I had to walk and say a line. I say a bunch of lines, and it was just really, really difficult. He was also making another movie called The Solitary Man with Michael Douglas at the same time. So after I had done this, I went and I was on the set when they were shooting The Solitary Man, and it made me think this Michael Douglas was just fantastic. And it's just being I don't think I was very good. I think that just because the director was so good, I didn't come across that badly. But I was also in the trailer, which was almost my whole scene, but the movie's really, really good, The Girlfriend Experience.
Well, I'm glad that you realize that it takes more than just saying the lines. I mean, you really do have to bring a naturalness to the character, correct? I mean, that's so different. I mean, you were so out of your element being in the field that you were in, that probably did make you feel a little bit uncomfortable, but I'm sure you did a great job. But I'm glad that you gained that wonderful, wonderful perspective of how hard it is to be an actor. You really do have to put 120% into it. So now, you were not exaggerating about being in a major motion film. I did not know. So now we know. That's fantastic. Yay. Okay. So we have a question from Susan from Washington Heights. Where in the heck? She didn't even put where that was from. Okay, so she said, I understand from the email that God Went Fishing is a commentary on the vices of 21st century society. Okay, Oh God, I can't. Oh, when they send these emails and they don't write proper English, I'm gonna wring your neck. Now it's made me look like an idiot, like I can't read. Okay, tell me more about your book, and how many more books did you write before this one? What type of books? And oh, it's a lot of questions. What type of books? And yeah, so what were there any? Basically, I think what she's saying is, how many books did you write before this one? I think that's what she was trying to ask.
This was my actual first book that I had written, and what I would say is the thing about the book, where I think it has a lot of different levels, is that it's a very, very funny book, and I think that I have a point of view which I want to get across, but at the end of the day, it's most people who read it really enjoy it and think that it's funny, even if they don't agree with some of the points that are made.
Now, do you consider yourself a funny guy? Are you a naturally funny guy? And if so, are you more like, you do more satire? What type of funny are you? Are you funny or British sardonic humor funny? What kind of funny is in the book?
Well, the book is a satire, and it's I would say it's both like ha ha laugh out loud, and then sardonic. But the question is, am I funny? Is I one of the things after you write a book, and a lot of people have read it, and everybody becomes a critic. So I was having dinner with a friend of mine I've known for a long time, and he said to me, how long have we known each other? And I said, about 15 years. And he said, how many times have we had dinner together? I'd say, I don't know, 100, 150. And he said, we've been away together, yes? I said, yes. He said, so in 15 years, you never said anything funny. Well, what were you waiting for? And I said, I thought your book was hysterical. I didn't know you were funny. So I think maybe I'm funnier in writing than
yeah.
I am in
real life. That's interesting too. A lot of people, because with a lot of comedians, when they're on stage, they are hysterically funny. But a lot of my friends who are in relationships with some of the funniest comedians tell me that they're very dark. They have a very dark side, and you wouldn't even know that they were a comedian. So it's just really interesting how some people's art comes out. It's either obvious and people are on all the time, or people can turn it off and turn it on at will. So you just never know. So, okay. So first of all, we know the old saying, different strokes for different folks. So, and then basically that means some like it, some people love it, and some people are going to hate it. So what type of person do you feel would really benefit from reading your latest book?
Well, I thought my audience, you know, is like people who appreciate The Family Guy or Howard Stern, and I thought that it mostly would be men from 18 to 40, and I'm surprised by how many emails and comments I get from college and graduate school women. I think it's a pretty eclectic audience, and it's not what I thought it would be.
So what was the inspiration for writing this book? Why all of a sudden did you decide to write a book? You're obviously a very successful man in your career. Why did you want to write a book?
Well, what happened was I was a student at NYU many years ago, and I was taking a class called Great Books, and we were told to write the first chapter of our favorite book, but set it in modern society. So this was in 1989. So my favorite book was Candide. And I wrote a chapter, and I forgot about it. I thought it was funny, and I thought it was pretty good, but I had forgotten about it. And then September 11 happened, and I said to somebody I was walking down the street with that day, I said, I wrote a short story like this in college. I don't remember what it was, but I wrote something like this. So about 3 years later, my mother was moving, and she found all these old papers that my sister and I had written. And I had written a paper where the terrorists from Saudi Arabia had captured five U.S. airplanes and were using it to attack historic landmarks. So so my mother sent it to me, and I decided, you know what, I'm gonna finish the book. So it took me another 4 years after that to finish it. But that's what I had put it down for so long, and then that's what made me start writing it again.
So do you think that this is the only book you're going to ever write, or do you see yourself, now that you've completed that book, that you're going to be writing future books?
Well, I'm writing another book, and I have two publishers that I'm trying to decide which one, which is my second, and it's a book about a presidential election. It's the voice of this book, where it's very, very fast, and I think there's humor on every page. It's a very difficult style to write, and this next book is about a guy who wants to be president and what happens, and it's funny, but it's not, my first book, I'd say, was more like a cross between Candide and Kurt Vonnegut, and had sort of a sparse, quick style, and like I said, it took me a long time to write it, and I was at one point 600 pages, which I cut down. This next book is going to be very different.
Oh, do you have a title already? Can you say or not say? Is it under secrecy?
No, I don't. I don't have a title. I don't have a title for it yet. But it's part of the book is a president who spends a lot of time trying to decide who his first, he doesn't believe in marriage, but who his first lady will be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of looking for the perfect woman while he's on his presidential election.
So I assume that you've had book signings, and there's been a lot of comments from your readers. So just tell us, what were some of the positive comments that you can remember about the book God Went Fishing?
You know, I've had a lot of book signings, and I get a shocking amount of email. And the nicest things that people say are, when this is a book that needs to be written a second time, or somebody point that, you know, I just thought it was funny, and I realized how deep and meaningful the main thing that this is a funny book, the nature of the book, because I wanted to demonstrate, you know, what was going on in the world. So there are all these characters that are sublime and have these ridiculous ideas and who are prejudiced and, you know, hate women and all these different ethnicities. And the point of it is to demonstrate, I have a point of view, agree with it or not. And I'd say about 85% of the people get it, and then 15% of the people are offended by some of the humor, and it's amazing to me, because it's a book of fiction, and the fact is that these ideas, some of these characters' ideas, are ridiculous. They're not my ideas, but people are passionate, and so I get a lot of positive reaction, but I get people taking the humor and being offended. And there's one character in the book that says humor is its own excuse, and I sort of believe that too.
So there have been more positive comments, though, than negative comments, I would imagine, right?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I'd say it's one of the things that if you write a book, and this book sold a lot of copies, is that people, you get contacted, and you get people have interesting points of views, and it's always nice to hear how they look at different things. But there are, you know, some percentage of the people that take some of the characters a little more serious, a little too seriously. There's a character in the the reactions. It's like you said, most people seem to really like it and enjoy it. There's a world leader who takes a very dim view on say the Muslim population, and I've gotten a lot of reaction from various groups, which it's just a book. It's a work of fiction. So that's been sort of a surprising thing to me.
Well, lots of people just are always looking to get a reaction out of something. Now, let me ask you, what did you, now this is your first book. You are obviously not, or were not prior to this book. I don't think you would consider yourself to be a skilled writer, author. What steps did you take to prepare yourself when you had decided that you were going to buckle down and write this book? Because you can't just, you know, you can write it on paper, but there is a format that you have to follow. There's a certain way that you have to write a book. What did you do to learn how to write this book?
Well, I mean, I read numerous books, and I was fortunate. I had a couple of friends who are writers who've been pretty successful. And in the early stage, they offered advice and comments, which was very helpful.
Oh, that's the only way that you learned how to write a book? I mean, when you finished writing it, it was probably very raw. Did you submit it to publishing companies? How did you get it to be published?
Well, what happened was I had a friend who was an agent, and then we sent it to a couple of publishers, and my publisher's been fantastic. Norlights, they did a fantastic job. And when we sent it to them, I was told that they get 6,000 to 7,000 submissions, and they only publish 5 to 6 books fiction a year. And because the book is quirky and different, that the numbers were even less likely. So when they decided to publish it, I agreed and signed right away. And then a week later, shockingly, a very large publishing house wanted to publish it also, but I really like working with Norlights. I think they did a fantastic job. They did a great job on the editing, and the book is so much better than really because of their efforts than when I first submitted it. But I had two different publishers, and my new book, the same thing. I've submitted 3 chapters, and I have 2 publishers who want to publish it.
So that's just amazing that you didn't really have too much experience prior to this book, and then you get picked up right away when there are people who have been writing for decades, and I have so many friends who are writers trying to get their stuff published, and they have actually created what they call a wall of rejection. And this is these are letters, because you know how you have to send your query letters out. Well, you may not know that because you got accepted right away, but they send out query letters and basically say, this is what my book is about. And then they have gotten so many letters back saying, sorry, but we're not interested, that they created a wall of rejection, and they put all the letters up there until hopefully one says yes. How do you feel about that? Do you feel lucky that you had an in and that the first book that you wrote has had so much success?
I don't know if we can say an in. Actually, I'd say the largest or the second largest publishing house in the UK, one of the editors read my first book and sent me an email saying there's a character in the book, Irving the Gangster. And he sent me a letter saying, we want you to write the book, Irving the Gangster. He said, I think this is one of the funniest books I've ever read. I love your book. And he said, we have an idea for you to write this book, Irving the Gangster. And we'd want it in the same voice and explore that character. So I'm debating whether I actually want to do that, but I'd say I was surprised because the book is a bit different, but it's a lot of people really seem to really like the book, and
trust me, you're lucky. I don't know if you know struggling writers, but if you did, you would know that sometimes it can take up to a decade before they get their stuff published. There's starving actors and musicians. There are starving writers out there that do not have the luck that you have. So you should consider yourself very, very fortunate that you've had such success. How many books have been sold so far?
I don't even know the numbers. I know they did another printing, and I don't know a lot. I've gotten over 1,000 emails.
Like millions or
thousands?
Thousands.
I don't want to give you an inaccurate number, but I've gotten over 1,000 emails of comments.
That's great. So why don't we take the final moments of the show, because we'll be ending the show shortly. Why don't we take the final moments so that we could hear, if you don't mind, why don't you read us a couple paragraphs out of – we have until about – I'd say – let's say it's 5:37. We have till – is it 5:37? Oh my God, it is. We have until 5:50. So why don't we read something? Let's read something out of your book. You've got us titillated now. And if you don't mind, let's read read us out, just like on the Carol Burnett Show. Read us on out, and I'll probably stop you about a minute before 5:50. But let's hear some thing from this wonderful book. The audience wants it. We want to know.
Okay,
but we want to, before we do that, let's make sure we know where everybody can get a copy. Is this being sold at Amazon, Barnes and Noble? Where can we get a copy?
You could get it online at Amazon, Barnes and Noble. You could get it in the bookstore at the Barnes and Noble or Borders.
And your website, godwentfishing.com, can they get it from there as well?
I think you can get it from there.
Okay.
I think the most common place people do, but you buy it on Amazon, and you could get it for your Kindle or your iPad.
Oh, it's available everywhere. You just Google God Went Fishing and it will come up. So make sure you do that. So we are going to get maybe if somebody buys a copy of your book and says that they heard about you on my show, maybe you could send them an autographed copy, huh? Could you commit
anybody
to
who
that?
Sends me it, I'll send an autographed copy. Anybody?
Yay! All right, so let's get to it. Give us a little bit of God Went Fishing. Tell us, set us up with what you're going to be reading to us.
Well, I'm going to read first the beginning of the book, and these are actually quotes from the book of people who Sigmund is the main character, and these are people who he meets and who said the quote. So I'm going to read you the quotes. It will give you a good sense of the book. So it's the beginning of the book. It says, the wisdom Sigmund encounters in his travels. So the first quote is, nothing sadder in life than when a woman doesn't know when to hang up her thong. And that's said by Irving the Gangster. The next is, quando el finito ex proximo tu estás lejos. That loosely translated is, the end is near, you be far. Next is, great men don't always make great fathers. That's from Adolf Hitler Jr., a disappointment. Marriage is a drinking man's curse. That's from Yuri, his flatulent valet. Most cover-ups we know nothing about. That's from Bernie, his mentor. The greatest gift a mother can give her daughter is the ability to say no. That comes from Agnes, octogenarian and nude skydiver. He does nothing, and he even does that wrong. That's from Pretentious Jones, a Duke graduate. A long memory is the greatest impediment to happiness. That's from Sam, the Polish eulogist. No one ever dies if you want them to. That's from Sully, the corrupt political boss. A lie is only a lie if somebody knows the truth. That's from Yuri the Flatulent Valet again. Teaching a child to hate prepares him for two careers, suicide bomber and bankruptcy attorney, both of which the world would be better off without. That's from Bernie the Mentor. It was a quite lighthearted suicide note. That's from DeJoseph the Artist. And lastly, the most important thing in life is a flat stomach. And that's from Marnie, the beautiful nurse, who's reduced to being a high-priced call girl.
Oh, the God knows that's the truth. All right, we got it. So keep going.
All right, so those are the quotes. I'll read you. Let's see what's a good part. Okay, Sigmund awoke on his 18th birthday with all the optimism of Anne Frank. He reflected on his happy, carefree life. His parents walked into his room. His mother, an archetypical Earth mother, was the president of the United States chapter of Jungian psychiatrists. Sigmund's father, a dapper, slim, not very tall man with a full beard, was the head of the Freudian International Society. He had promised Sigmund a big surprise. "I'm leaving your mother," his father said. After 19 years, Sigmund asked, "Sigmund, my only child," he began, "I realize it, detested everything about her, but decided to remain until you turned 18. At that point, I would leave your horrible mother and go your own, my own way." "How long ago did you realize this?" Sigmund asked. "A couple of weeks after the wedding." "You could have mentioned it," the wife said. "Shut up," he replied. "But what will happen to me?" Sigmund asked. His father looked at him disappointedly. "Nothing much, I fear. But I'm only 18. By your age, I had my doctorate." Then this is sort of the key part. He says, "I can't believe this. My parents are abandoning me 2 years to the day that my first love, Heather, left me. I must be a horrible person to deserve such misfortune." "That's not exactly true." "What's not true?" "You're not exactly our child." "Oh," Sigmund said. The truth is, my pregnancy went well until I went into labor 3 months early. Your father was guest conducting the Mormon Tabernacle Choir in India. I was stuck lecturing at Valhalla Medical College. You were born at 12 midnight. My child came out 3 minutes later. It was with great surprise that my first offspring was African-American, the progeny of a dalliance with a fabulous man I met on death row as part of a study of violent killers. I, thinking of your father, took an innocuous-looking infant who seemed very peaceful and put my child in his place. No harm, no foul. So that's how it starts off. He finds out that he's been stolen at birth, and then he spends the rest of the book trying to figure out who he was and who his parents are. And
wow, I'm like totally intrigued. Ooh, as soon as I get off this phone, I'm going to Amazon. I am going to be getting this book. That sounds really good, and I do think that you definitely have some humor. It's really interesting because you seem like a serious guy, but then when you read what you've written, I mean, there's a whole different personality there. It's like a whole different character comes to life. Your funny comes out. You're bringing on the funny, honey.
Yeah.
It's interesting how our true artist comes out. So you definitely, I would continue writing if I were you, because that seems to be something that you're really good at, just from what you've read. Now let me ask you a question. We have a couple minutes, and I want to get your opinion. I want you actually to give advice to the audience for people who want to be writers and they want to have as much success as you. What are, just say, let's come up with three. What are three characteristic traits that you feel it takes to get the book done, to be a good writer, to make it happen? Not just dream about it or start writing and then put it down. What three characteristic traits do you really need to have to be a successful writer?
I think that one, you should. I think that, well, I what three characteristics? I think you have to have a story to tell and a point of view that you want to get across. That's one. Two, I think that one of the biggest dangers, and I had a problem with it, is you really don't want to have talking heads So the idea, you have to have a good storyline, and you have to have a way of telling it, and you have to have something that people are interested in. And three, it's really the rewriting that, again, for me, was the, it was getting the process down. So I knew where I wanted to start. I knew where I wanted to end. And not getting too attached when your publisher's taking out things, and you can't get too attached. It's just they're words, and you can't get too attached, and you have to be able to listen to people and listen to advice, and you can't have when my last edit, we probably cut about 15% of the book, and the book went from just being choppy to really flowing well, and they took all these things out that I thought things were funny, and I thought and it really made the book better. So you have to have good sounding boards, and you have to have good people around you. But at the end of the day, it's if you love to do something and you have a story that you feel is worth telling, it's just going and sitting down, and no matter how tired I was, I was resigned to the fact that I wanted to finish it, so I would do it every day. And another thing that I learned was I wrote much better in the morning, so I adjusted. So you have to find whatever formula Aristotle said the truth is what works. You have to find what works for you as a writer. And you have to write about things that you really know about, and you should write about things that you're passionate about. One of the other things I'll tell you, last thing I'll say, I know you're pressed for time, is how many people think when you write a book who you know that you're talking about them. And I think that's a compliment, because I have all these people that some people were offended saying, you know, how'd you put this about me in the book? How'd you put that? And the reality was most of the characters are compilations of a lot of people. And most of the time when people thought I was talking about them, I wasn't. But you got to write what you know and write what you're comfortable with. It's a great, great experience. And, you know, I wrote this book and I decided I wanted to finish it really for myself. And I'm glad that other people liked it, but I felt I had a point of view and I wanted to express it. And it just turned out, it came out pretty well, I think.
So how has your family reacted? Have they been supportive and they're like, go, Dennis, go, write some
no,
more?
No, I mean, I would say, like, people I haven't seen in years, I'll get emails or texts or letters from. But the characters in the book are odious. And there are characters that espouse ridiculous points of view, and my family is very, very straight-laced, and like they sometimes they're a little bit embarrassed by it, and it's shocking to me that people take there are characters in the book that are definitely offensive, and they're purposefully offensive, and I'm sorry if some of the people take offense to it. I think when you finish the book, everyone sees that it's a positive message, but when you're reading about these characters that are comical, so the answer is no, my family hasn't been that supportive.
Well, they will when you're on the bestseller list and you're going to just say, you're not even going to get an autographed copy because you were not supportive. Well, I tell you, my God, I wish you the best success. I really do. If you have one thing, give me one last piece of advice that you feel if somebody has written things, sent them, and they've been rejected over and over and over again, what advice would you tell them?
Don't give up. That the people that I'm lucky, the first few people that read my book were absolutely hated it. They thought it was well written, but they said this is the most offensive thing. And I've had the fact is that you can't give up. It doesn't mean anything that this one doesn't like it or that doesn't like it. Just just write what you feel. And at the end of the day, people appreciate it. Like I said, I've gotten over 1,000 positive emails, and I had a first cousin who's actually a writer, a lawyer too, and she said, this is the worst thing I've ever read. And she didn't mean in terms of writing. She just thought it was offensive. And
but that's what gets people talking. That's what gets them talking for sure. Well, I tell you, Dennis, thank you so much, Dennis Shields, for coming on the show. Go out, visit the website, Godwin Fishing, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. Just type Godwin Fishing and you will find this book. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We wish you much success. We're sure that you will have. Thank you, everybody, for listening in to Question Reality. And we will see you next week. Say goodbye, Dennis.
Bye. Thank you so much. I hope everyone enjoys the book.
Yeah, thank you. God bless you. Bye, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.